yourself a song to sing, and sing it till you're done. Yeah, sing it hard and sing it well. Send the robber barons straight to hell. The greedy thieves who came around and ate the flesh of everything they found, whose crimes have gone unpunished now, walk the streets a-screaming now.
Greetings, all you 99 percenters. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. Okay, what is the big news of the past week? Well, obviously, it's central banks. Central banks are out of control. And we see that in the recent meetings here of the Federal Reserve, the U.S. Central Bank, this past week, and especially in the case of the Central Bank of Japan, the Bank of Japan, and confusion going on the other side of the world with the European Central Bank. All right, what does this all represent? It represents that monetary policy, central bank-driven monetary policy, is in a big crisis. And the central banks are getting nervous and engaging, grasping for straws, new monetary tools and measures to try to get some bang out of the buck for money from monetary policy, which is liquidity injections into the economy, as past experiments and innovations that have resulted in even more monetary liquidity injections continue to fail. In other words, it's like an addiction. You know, when addicts get hooked on something, they have to keep taking more and more because the old quantities of whatever it was they were ingesting just aren't having the effect. They aren't creating the high. So they've got to take more and more to get an equivalent high. And pretty soon, they take more and more, and it kills them. Well, that's what's happening here. The high that the central banks are trying to get is inflation. They're trying to get inflation going up to 2% per year. That's their magic number, but they're nowhere near it. They're not only nowhere near it, they're falling behind it. So they got to keep pushing even more money into the economy. As I've said many times, the problem with this whole strategy, this monetary policy, central bank-driven so-called growth recovery, which isn't a recovery, the problem with it is that the money injections aren't going into real investment. What's real investment? It's investment to expand structures and buildings and equipment and production and inventories and so forth. That's what the real economy is. That's what creates jobs. That's what creates wages and incomes. That's what creates investment and in turn, and that's what generates recovery. And of course, the recoveries have been terrible since 2008. The U.S. recovery, barely 1.5% on average, which is less than half of its normal recovery rate. Even worse in Japan. Japan has been in and out of five recessions since 2008. Europe has had a double-dip recession and continues to stagnate at less than 1% growth. China is slowing down dramatically, about growing about one-third of what it was in 2010 and 11, the global economy continues to slow. And the official institutions and research arms of the global capitalist system, you know, the IMFs, the Bank of International Settlements, the OECD, the Fed, etc., World Bank, they all are lowering their forecasts reluctantly behind the curve. The economy keeps slowing more than they're reporting, and they keep adjusting their reports downward. Then we'll see. We'll talk about the Federal Reserve, Janet Yellen's press conference this past week, and the decision by the Fed acknowledges that now in the U.S. Hold that one. But we'll get to that one shortly. And the same thing in Japan. Two big decisions. The Bank of Japan Chairman Kuroda made another move, another innovative move, a desperate move, to try to get the economy going in Japan, and it will fail as all the others have failed before it. And the Fed has announced a new move here, yet a new kind of tool and target in its desperate attempt to get something going. And we'll talk about that shortly. The ECB in Europe is sitting on the sidelines watching the two. What are we going to do next? Do we have to move even more as the others move, or will the Federal Reserve raise rates and take the heat off of us? Let's see what happens, is what Mario Draghi is saying over there in Europe, waiting for Japan and the Fed to move. Well, Japan moved cautiously. It's also waiting on the Fed. You see, if the Fed raises interest rates, which it will in December, it'll take some pressure off both of those economies, Japan and Europe, the other two major economies in the world. And I predict there will be absolutely a rate increase in December by the Federal Reserve unless the economy weakens dramatically. I've also been advocating that as monetary policy not only loses its steam in terms of generating any positive effect, it hasn't had much, you know, but as it loses its steam, there will be a shift to fiscal spending. That's coming up to the first of the year, fiscal stimulus. But it will be mostly infrastructure and therefore long-term stimulus, and it will be too little too late to stop a recession next year, which I predict is also coming in the U.S. Okay, so let's go back to the central banks here. In particular, the announcements of the past week by the Fed and the Bank of Japan. Okay, let's look at the Bank of Japan first, because the Bank of Japan has been the leader globally here in experimentation. And experimentation try to have a monetary policy function as the main lever of economic recovery. The Bank of Japan has been the most aggressive in terms of pumping liquidity into the global economy of all the global central banks, the most aggressive. It's been the pioneer, and its economy has done the worst. Even worse than the U.S. and Europe, and certainly worse than China. So as the BOJ, Bank of Japan, has engaged in more and more aggressive monetary injections, the economy has gotten worse. It ought to tell you something about the limits of monetary policy. But you see, bankers and capitalists love emphasizing and giving priority to monetary policy, because monetary policy means a quick fix. It means the money is directly injected. You know, it's mainline. It's put it right in the vein there. It's mainline monetary injection, central bank monetary policy. If you were to gauge in fiscal stimulus, you see, fiscal stimulus would put money in the hands of non-bankers, non-financial institutions, non-investors, put it in the hands of, depending on the character of the fiscal stimulus, in the hands of households, in the hands of small business, and even other non-financial businesses. It would put money there to stimulate the real economy, and the real economy stimulating would then borrow from the banks. And banks would be dragged along in terms of profitability and recovery. You know, they wouldn't be primary. It would trickle up to the banks. Fiscal policy, expansionary fiscal policy, means trickle up to the banks. Monetary policy means direct injection to the banks. and investors, they recover first. They recover massively, quickly. And the hope is, according to the theory and policy, that they will be so satiated in terms of money and profits that they will allow some of it to trickle down into real expansion, the real economy. You know, so it's the direction of recovery and the pace of recovery differs with monetary policy versus fiscal policy. And because the bankers and financial interests still have a stranglehold on the political system, they've gotten their way. You know, they caused the collapse in 2008-09, and then they convinced their political friends to focus on their recovery first, and massively. And even after they were recovered within a year by 2010, they insisted that the massive central bank injections continue, and they have ever since. Trillions and trillions of dollars. And it's taken the form of QE, quantitative easing. In other words, the central bank buys up the bonds and the bad assets. What were bad assets? They're all bought up now. Subprime mortgages, you know, they're all sitting on the central bank, the Fed balance sheet. They're no longer on private investor balance sheet. And the idea was, well, you get it off private investor balance sheets, and that will free up their ability to invest and expand the real economy. Well, that didn't happen. All the free money kept flowing, and it didn't, in turn, flow into real investment. Where did it flow? It flowed offshore to emerging markets, or it flowed into financial speculation in stocks and bonds and derivatives and foreign exchange, and all those financial asset markets boomed, and all the bankers and investors made hand over fist profits that way. Or it's just sitting on balance sheets, bank balance sheets, and financial institutions' balance sheets. The same for multinational corporations who've been avoiding taxes for some time now, hoarding their money offshore. Well, there's trillions and trillions of dollars just in the U.S. just sitting on the sidelines being hoarded. That's the result of all this free money from the Federal Reserve. So a little of it, maybe a quarter of it, has gotten into real asset investment, maybe a quarter, studies show. And that's not working. You know, it's less than a quarter now, so the central banks keep pumping more and more money to get less and less results of the real economy. And in the meantime, bankers and financial investors are gorging themselves. And, you know, general economy business is gorged. It's fat. It's, you know, it's obscenely overinvested. Obscenely. It's got way too much cash on the sidelines. But it's not committing it, you see. That's the problem. They've been eating Twinkies forever here, economic Twinkies, and getting fat off the economic Twinkies, and no one's eating their vegetables. Okay. So what did the Bank of Japan, what has it done, and what has it been doing, and what has it done last week? Okay. Once again, think of the BOJ as sort of the direction central banks have been moving. It's the pioneer. You know, it first introduced QE, quantitative easing, here, you know, in the previous decade. It was the first. It was the first to collapse in the 1990s and hasn't really recovered, you know, off and on, off and on. It was the first to introduce QE and then reintroduce it after 2008. QE is buying bonds, government bonds, central bank buying bonds, taking these bonds off the balance sheets of private banks and investors, and putting out its own government central bank balance sheet, indebting itself. So it's buying these bonds with QE. Well, but then, you know, it expanded its buying. It started buying corporate bonds, not just government bonds, but corporate bonds from the private sector. And, you know, buying all the bonds in the QE, it drives down the interest rates on those bonds, right? You increase demand for bonds. The price of bonds goes up and the rate goes down. And with the rate so low on corporate bonds, well, corporations, including non-financial corporations, you know, just keep issuing these bonds because it's so cheap for them to do so because the government's going to buy it up. You know, you've got a monopoly purchaser here, guaranteed buying. So just issue the bonds, corporate bonds, if the central bank's buying corporate bonds, and interest rates are so low, and then, you know, private investors buy the corporate bonds, and you make so much money on issuing these cheap corporate bonds that you can turn around and give a lot of it back to your shareholders in dividend payouts. Or you can take it and buy up your corporate stock, right, which is another windfall for shareholder ownership of your stock, right? That drives your stock price up. CEOs get nice bonuses for that. Okay, so in the U.S. alone, as I've said before, $5 trillion in dividend and stock buybacks in the last 5 years, $5 trillion. Well, that's been engineered to a great extent by the very low bond rates made possible by the very low interest rates made possible by the central bank. You see, it all goes back to the central bank here. And what you're doing is enriching the 1% significantly. Monetary policy is enriching the 1% tremendously. That's why figures show that 97% of all the national income created in the U.S. since 2010 has gone to the wealthiest 1% households. 97% of all the income gains has gone to the 1%. Talk about income inequality. You know, that's what's driving it. You can go back to monetary policy, central bank policy, and the super low interest rates now for 8 years. You know, which is stimulating financial asset markets, stocks and bonds, and you know, we're not even, you don't even see how much it's stimulating the derivatives markets, or foreign exchange speculation, or real estate prices at the high end. You know, all of that, the whole system is structured to funnel money into the 1%, and the central bank is at the heart of this by engineering low rates. Okay, so QE does that. QE. How much has Japan engaged in QE since it all started? Well, it's bond buying, government bond buying, only buying of government bonds, let alone corporate bonds, you know, in Japan. $80 trillion a year. That is equal to about $800 billion a year that Japan is buying of government bonds from investors. Wow, $800 billion. You know, the equivalent, you know, it's about a $6 trillion economy. The equivalent in the U.S., which is a $19 trillion economy, would be as if the Federal Reserve was buying $2.5 trillion a year. So Japan's BOJ QE is three times larger than the U.S., than what the U.S. Was buying at the peak. Massive, massive. And nothing's happening. All that money being injected, all that yen being injected in the Japanese economy, and nothing is happening. They can't even get, with their money injected, they can't even get their currency to depreciate with it anymore. Oh, but it, you know, stimulates the stock market, but even there, you know, the amount of it stimulating stock market is minimal, and it certainly has had virtually no effect on China, on Japan's real economy. So why do they keep doing it? Well, that's a good question. Well, somebody's got political influence on, don't they? You don't see it, but it's there. Right. The BOJ claims that, you know, in the past, this bond buying, government bond buying and corporate bond buying will drive up interest rates. I mean, excuse me, drive up the inflation rate to 2%. That's their target, 2% inflation. Now, that's inflation in real goods and services, not inflation in financial assets like stocks, bonds, and so forth, right? That inflation has occurred in financial assets. But this target is 2% in real goods and prices. Ah, but you continue to have deflation in real goods and prices. Ironic. As the amount of liquidity has been injected by Japan Central Bank, ostensibly to raise inflation, inflation has deflated, going in the opposite direction. They can't even get 1%. They crossed into negative price inflation here in early 2015. That's continued ever since. You know, and each time it goes lower, they say, okay, we're going to pump even more money into the economy to get it up. And it keeps going lower. What's wrong with that? If it's broke, in other words, keep doing your same solution. And as the break gets worse, keep pumping even more in. It has nothing to do with economics. Clearly, it has to do with politics and money and who's getting it. Okay, so the Bank of Japan then said, well, you know, let's try buying stocks. So they start buying stocks. You know, exchange fund, exchange-traded funds and stocks. So, you know, now they're buying not just government and private corporate bonds assets. They're buying securities. They're buying stocks now. They're running out of government bonds to buy. They bought so much. And what do? You just keep buying up all the other financial assets? Well, if you keep buying up other financial assets like stocks and so forth, you're going to just keep driving the price of those up. Increased demand drives the price. And, oh, that's great for those who are holding stocks. And this latest move this past week gave a bump to the stock market, especially stocks of private banks in Japan. But it didn't last long. You see, you know, they're getting less bang for the buck every time they do these things. And it hasn't had much of an effect on the real economy. Right? So this 2% inflation goal, you know, is nowhere near being reached. Bank of Japan, earlier this year in January, led the descent into negative interest rates on government bonds. The whole idea was, well, if you know banks got to park their money with the central bank and pay to park their money, not get anything for it, then they won't park their money and they will invest it, right? In real assets in Japan and stimulate the economy in Japan. No. We're in a global economy. Instead of investing it in Japan, they just send it somewhere else in the world, which does no good for Japan. You know, they invest their money and put those yens and whatever they buy dollars, or they put it in U.S. government securities, or they send it somewhere else in the world. You know, it's a globalized economy, and there's central banks, national central banks, still think they can influence domestic policy, through monetary means. They can't. Capitalists just move their money around, especially the financial capitalists, because they can. It's all electronic. You see, they just touch a button, boom, there it goes somewhere else. And they see what's happening all around the world and, you know, small price movements here and there, and they just keep moving it around. You know, there's trillions and trillions sloshing around the global economy, going from one financial asset market to another, and not going into real investment. Then they wonder why growth is slowing. Then they wonder why, you know, productivity everywhere else is collapsing. Well, because there's not enough real asset investment going on, because the money capital is being diverted into financial speculation and financial assets everywhere. And, of course, if you don't have productivity growth, which we don't, it slows down the real economy, the global economy. And that's happening as well. You see, so it's all this is interrelated. But at the core of this is contributing significantly is this idiocy of monetary central bank policy, which is contributing to the growing problems, not resolving them, never has resolved them. So, okay, what did the Bank of Japan do this past week? What's their latest move, right? Well, they're going to keep QE at $800 billion a year. That's not going to change. And now they're going to, as they said, they're going to cap the 10-year government bond rate at zero. And that was their pledge, is to keep rates on government bonds at zero, which means they'll pump what additional money they have to into the economy to keep those rates at zero for 10 years. And they'll add more QE if they have to. You know, it's a signal that, okay, we're going to add more QE. Well, why didn't they just do and add more QE? Because they want to wait for the Fed, you see, and see what the Fed's going to do to determine how much they have to do in turn, right? But the move means, by BOJ, that they're going to buy everything to keep the 10-year bond rate at zero for 10 years or more. And they announced that our goal is not the 2% inflation rate. Our goal is more than 2%. More, they can't get it to 2, right? They're deflating. They're going negative. They're more than 2% away from 2. And now they're saying we're going to go for more than 2. Well, what does that mean? That means they're trying to scare people. They're trying to say, oh, inflationary expectations. They're trying to raise inflationary expectations. You know, if the Bank of Japan, the central bank, has pledged now to pump even more money into the economy, that must mean that inflation is going to happen, right? This is this mainstream economic theory that money causes inflation in real goods and services, which is totally false in the economy we're in now. Because it's an open global economy, it's a financialized economy, right? And you can pump all the money you want into the system. It's not going into expanding goods and services. It's going into finance. It's going elsewhere around the world. It's being hoarded on the balance sheets. It's not going into the real economy to raise goods prices. And no one believes it anymore. So there are, you know, inflationary expectations. People are expecting inflation prices to remain flat or decline, especially in Japan. They can't change the inflationary expectations. The idea is to create more inflationary expectations, which will then result in higher prices. You see, if people think prices are going to rise for their cars or their homes, they're going to go out and buy more, you know, and that will drive demand and that will drive the prices up. You know, you manipulate psychology of consumers and small investors and get them to think inflation's coming, so they go and buy now. And that generates the inflation. Well, they can't get inflationary expectations up. In fact, they're falling. That's why the BOJ says, oh, we're going to shoot for even more than 2%. Even more, right? I mean, it's desperation. It's desperation. It's not even a policy. It's desperation, right? So all this pledge about keeping the 10-year rate at zero for 10 years and adjusting QE to make sure that that happens, right, and declaring that the goal is more than 2% inflation is all proof that the policy is failing even more. And the negative rate idea, you know, has failed. What has the negative rates done? Well, they haven't, as I said, they haven't resulted in more investment. What negative rates have done is squeeze what's called the yield curve. What's the yield curve? It's the spread between long-term and short-term rates. And if that yield curve flattens, in other words, squeezes, so the space between long-term and short-term rates disappears, then banks are in trouble, you see, because banks borrow from the Fed, right, at low rates, or each other, which is influenced by the Fed, from, you know, at low rates, and they lend out at high rates, the spread. The bigger the spread, the better the bank profits, all things equal. Well, when you flatten that yield curve, right, there's no spread. And what do banks do? They stop lending. They can't make profits on lending, so they stop lending. So all the negative rates and even low rates have done is to squeeze banks and have a negative effect on lending into real assets, which already can't compete with lending into financial assets, you see, for profitability terms. So you're making it worse. What this represents, the BOJ decision also represents, is that the BOJ is now trying to control, to manipulate the yield curve. Right? It's trying to create more of a spread between long-term and short-term rates. Right? Well, it's not going to work. But it represents a yet another desperate move, you see. I mean, look, central banks can barely control influence, or when I say control, can barely influence short-term rates. They've never been able to influence long-term interest rates because all kind of other forces economically driving that. Now they're going to try to manipulate long-term rates in relationship to short-term rates. Ha! You know, they're failing in the traditional, and they're trying to say they're going to expand their control over rates that they're losing control over anyway. I mean, it's just grasping for straws. You know, it's just justifications for failure. They're running out of steam. They're running out of buying government bonds, for one thing. You know, they won't run out of buying corporate bonds because corporations just keep issuing bonds since they're so cheap, right? And then the central bank will buy them up. It's kind of like a circular, self-sustaining situation, isn't it? Low rates generate corporate bond issuance, and central banks then buy the corporate bonds, another way of funneling money into the private sector. That's all it is, say. The negative rates are hurting pension funds and insurance companies, right? And hedge funds are now taking big losses. How does it affect pension funds and insurance companies? Well, because the low rates don't produce any yield to cover their obligations in terms of annuities and pension fund payouts, right? Pension fund payouts are way above, and required by law, way above what these shadow banks, pension funds, insurance companies, and shadow banks are making. So they're taking losses, you see. And we're reaching a point of a major pension crisis, an insurance company crisis that could reverberate, you know, throughout the rest of the global economy and financial system, because these two giant sources of money capital, pension funds, insurance companies, are tied in, are linked to all these other credit markets and other financial institutions and banks. You see, it's all in, as the global financial system has become expanded, it's become integrated, you know, and they're all holding each other's securities. So if one goes, it tips the other. It's like the subprime mortgages, you see, and derivatives. It's very similar. Okay. So low rates put pension funds, insurance companies in trouble. There's not enough yield, and hedge funds are in trouble. Right, banks see their profits squeeze, and tens of millions of retirees who depend on fixed income have none. So that has a negative effect on real household demand. This whole policy, central bank policy, is causing problems, and serious problems. It's not only not working in terms of not stimulating the real economy, it's not only continually to pump, you know, income and into, you know, high-end households and investors, right? It's doing all of that, right? It's not only not stimulating the real economy, it's not leading to real bank lending and expansion and real asset investment that create jobs and incomes. You know, it's not only not achieving those things, or achieving them at less and less an effect. You know, I mean, like an addict, as I said, you got to keep pumping more of that directly into your vein to get to the same high, and it gets worse and worse, right? Not only on that, but it is causing negative problems as well. Right? In the financial institutions, other financial institutions, and in the real economy, you know, it's a problem. Okay. Central banks are running out of economic ammunition. You can see it with the Fed. You know, the Fed starts out in 2010 says, well, our goal is a 2% inflation rate, just like Japan, right? And then it shifts its goal from 2%, says, oh, well, our goal is really the unemployment rate. Then the unemployment rate gets down, you know, at least that phony unemployment rate, the U3, which it looks at, the Fed. Instead of you looking at U6 unemployment rate, which is closer to reality, it targets the U3, and that's at 4.9%. So, you know, okay, so you reach that, and they say, oh, well, no, it's not unemployment, it's wages. We got to get wages up. Well, they don't get wages up except for the high end, the highest 20% of the workforce. You know, the rest are languishing. You know, so they stop talking about wages as the goal, right? And now the Fed says, okay, we're gonna target the natural interest rates and real nominal interest rates. Okay, we'll talk about that shortly. So they keep moving their goalposts, you know, as to what is the target, what is this all about? And they keep adding all these different programs, the expanding liquidity and everything, and you know, everyone's getting confused. What the hell is the Fed doing? You know, what is its real goal, real target? You know, and the same can be said about Bank of Japan. It looks like they're just creating, you know, new targets, new goals, new tools as they go. And as they go, the money keeps flowing in to wealthy investors and financial institutions, right? This biggest injection of money liquidity in Japan has what? It's resulted in a series of boomlets in stock markets, equity prices, but it hasn't raised GDP at all, the real economy. You know, Japan's had five recessions. It hasn't raised wages at all. There's no real asset investment, right? You would think that it would mean all the excess money would mean that the currency, the yen, would depreciate. Well, no. Now it rises. This last move, you know, they got a little dip in the yen, and it went right back up. Deflation is continuing. And everywhere else, investors, even those with fixed incomes, are getting desperate, searching for yield, as they say. I mean, you can't make any money anywhere, you know, unless you're a banker. And you keep getting all the free money from the central bank. Okay, so let's move to the Fed. You know, what's happening in the Fed? Federal Reserve, right? Well, we had a meeting this past week with Janet Yellen in the Federal Reserve. And if you listen to her press conference real close, what did she say? Oh, the economy is doing okay, she says. You know, I've talked about the economy, the real indicators. You know, we got no business investment going on. We got signs that retail sales are in trouble. Even services are in trouble, right? We got signs of volatility in the job market. You know, and Janet thinks the job market is just fine. You know, she looks at the last 4 months. She keeps saying, well, we're creating 180,000 jobs the past 4 months. Ah, but look at the volatility in that. Up and down, up and down. I mean, that's a sign that jobs, which are a lagging indicator, are about to descend as well. Okay? And she looks at inflation, and inflation, the PCE, personal consumption expenditures price indicator, you know, is rising at less than 1% over the past year. Less than 1%. In other words, it's softening. It's going in the direction of Europe and Japan. Prices are softening, which means the real economy is softening. We're talking about prices for goods and services, right? And what did the Fed and Janet do here in their last meeting this past week? Well, for one thing, they significantly reduced their estimate for the growth of the U.S. economy. They admit it's only going to grow 1.8% this year. I think it's going to grow less. And, of course, less than 1.5 easily, because it only grew, what, 0.7%, 0.8% in the first half of this year. How is it going to grow 1.8% for the whole year if it, you know, barely grew half of that in the first half of this year, especially when you adjust for the phony GDP increases by redefining GDP in the last couple of years, right? I estimate it grew about 0.6% in the first half of this year. Well, how are you going to get it even up to 1.8%, which is about, you know, 2/3 and 60% of what would be normal? How are you going to get up to 1.8%? Well, you're going to have to grow like 3 to 4% in the last half of this year. Not going to happen, even though it's an election year. And you get a big boost in, you know, the second half in an election year. Government spending increases, you know, gives a boost right before the election. 1.8%. And next year, and 2018, 2%. Oh, and then back in 2019, 1.8%. Okay? That's what they're saying. 1.8% growth rate, which is nothing. You know? Now, Janet also says that the median unemployment rate is going to continue to drop to 4.5%. That's the U3 rate, right? So with that slow growth, we're still going to improve employment over the next 3 years. Well, how do you figure that, you know? If growth is going to slow, and it's already low and going to slow, how are you going to continue for 3 more years reducing unemployment? It doesn't make logical sense. And with the growth slowing, inflation is going to rise from 1.3% this year. I think it's less than 1%, but let's say 1.3% is the median inflation forecast by the Fed. It's going to grow to 2%. They're going to make their 2% market target in 2 years, next 2 years. Okay, so that means the economy is stimulating. It's growing, right? No, it's slowing. Growth is supposed to slow. Unemployment is supposed to continue to go down for 3 more years. And inflation is going to go up, even though growth is slowing. Something wrong here. Especially since estimates for the federal funds rate, that's the rate, interest rate, the short-term rate that the Fed targets, is going to rise. You know, federal funds rate is now 0.5%, right? Next year it's supposed to rise to 1.1%, to 1.9% in 2018, and 2.6% in 2019. Well, go figure, you know. Interest rates are going to quadruple next few years, right? And the economy is going to slow down, but unemployment is going to continue to go down, inflation is going to continue to rise. I mean, this is crazy. What the hell are they talking about, right? How are you going to get interest rates from 0.5% to 2.5% in the next couple of years? I believe the economy, if they go to 2.5%, I believe the economy is going to grow even slower. Because as I've said, we got a change in the nature of the effect of interest rates on the real economy in the 21st century, and that is you can lower interest rates significantly, and it will have little sensitivity, positive sensitivity, and effect. Economists call that elasticity on real growth. In other words, it takes a big drop in rates to get a little push in real investment. That's because, as I said, the money's being diverted elsewhere. Conversely, for the same reasons of the changes in the structural economy, a small increase in interest rates will have a big negative impact on real investment. And the Fed is projecting, 500% increase in interest rates from 0.5% to 2.6% in the next couple of years. And that's hardly going to budge in the next couple of years. We're going to get that big increase in interest rate, and median GDP this year, 1.8%, is going to be the same 1.8% in 2019. So growth, GDP won't change as a result of the huge increase in interest rates, federal fund rate, right? Go figure that one, too. And these are supposed to be our best monetary economists? They come up with this? In the press conference afterwards, this was raised by one of the reporters from Bloomberg. He said, well, wait a minute. How do you get that, the big increase in rates and the economy doesn't weaken, And unemployment keeps going down for two more years, from 4.8 to 4.5, right? How do you get that? Well, wasn't a good answer, right? Janet says, quote, we're generally pleased with what the economy is doing. Is she blind? I guess so, right? She keeps referring to the labor markets, right? Oh, the labor markets are strengthening. Well, didn't she see a couple of months ago we had, less than 100,000 job creation? Did she see that? And doesn't she know that most of the jobs created are part-time temp jobs, low-paid, low-income, no-benefit jobs? Doesn't she know that? Well, I'm sure she does, right? But she says, quote, the economy has a little more room to run than we thought. Run? Is it running? At 1.8% or less, is that a run? That's a stumble. Okay, so she introduces this new concept here, right? There's a neutral federal funds rate, right? And what we're trying to do is bring the neutral federal funds rate and the actual nominal federal funds rate, into sync here. Gobbledygook. Neutral. What the hell is the neutral federal funds rate? Nobody has any idea what that is. But it's one of these moving targets, right? Make it look like they know what they're doing. They got something, scientific that they're working on. Some real target, whether that's inflation or wage increases or jobs or, whatever. Reporter in the press conference asked, what about this global reach for yield? Reach is, putting it mildly, desperate search for yield, right? That low interest rates seem to be stimulating, right? In other words, the reach for yield is, what I said, pension funds and insurance companies and others and grandma and grandpa here, can't make any money. They're desperately looking for something that has a return, a rate of return. And they can't find it. So they take desperate, risky moves. Let's buy some minus BBB rated junk bonds or something, right? So we can get a 4%, 5% return on our money. Well, when the break comes, those people are going to lose it all. And she said, Well, we're concerned to the extent that low rates might be causing financial instability and greater risk. Well, we're concerned, right? But we don't see, quote, any asset valuations not exceeding historical norms. Come on, Janet. You can't see it? Where it's happening? Oh, she sort of gave a back reference to commercial real estate. Maybe the yields are too high. Valuations are too high, maybe, right? But that's it. You know, the stock market is, you know, out of control, and derivative markets are not out of control, you know, in terms of price bubbles going on, right? And then she says, we're not seeing any signs of leveraging. What's leveraging? That's excess debt. Huh. $5 trillion in corporate bond issuance? Globally corporate bond issuance? And loans, bonds and loans, corporate bonds and loans, $55 trillion, according to the Bank of International Settlements, just since 2009, $55 trillion more. And she doesn't see any leveraging. Leveraging is borrowing. You know, it's debt, taking on debt to run your business or make payments back to stockholders and shareholders, right? Oh, but she says, you know, real investment has been quite weak for some time. Yeah, you don't see any relationship, inverse relationship between low and weak real asset investment and leveraging, stimulating financial asset speculation in markets? You don't see that? Okay. But she doesn't understand, and she admits she didn't understand, why real investment has been quite weak for some time. You know, in the U.S., gross private domestic investment, business investment, you know, and plant and equipment, structures, so forth, is only growing at 2%, going to the lowest rates ever. I mean, that's a recession number, you know, and slowing. Productivity is, you know, flat to nothing. That's a recession number. Okay. But she said, you know, even though real investment has been quite weak for some time, that's a quote, but, quote, we're not sure what's causing that. I'm not sure or certain what explains that. Ha! Huh. The chair of the Federal Reserve does not know why business investment is collapsing. All but she says consumer sentiment is solid, right? Yeah. Solid among the top 20% households, maybe, but not among the rest, right? They look at averages, you see. And they don't look at what's actually happening in major segments of the economy, you know, whether it's consumer households or whatever, right? She admitted that there were risks waiting too long to raise interest rates. Yeah, there are risks to that, right? But you see, the Fed's caught between a rock and a hard place on raising rates. Right? If it raises rates, it drives the dollar up. If it drives the dollar up, all U.S. multinational corporations around the world take big money loss, money profit losses. How is that? Well, they take the money losses because the currencies of those countries in which they're doing business collapses. So they lose money because of the currency collapse. So the Fed is nervous, you know. I mean, how does it take care of U.S. multinational corporations if it raises rates in the U.S.? And that raises the dollar, and that collapses other currencies and their profits, you see. So that's a negative, right? On the other hand, the contradiction is if the Fed doesn't raise rates in the U.S., then pension funds and insurance companies and hedge funds and others are in trouble, increasingly so, you see. So it's damned if it does, damned if it doesn't. They know that, and they're sort of waffling. You know? And then you got the election situation, and if they make a move here before the election, it will stimulate the growing crescendo for structural reform of the Fed. You know, a number of questions there along that line were raised in the press conference. You know, are you politically independent, and, you know, like three or four times that was raised, and Yellen made, you know, great effort to say, no, no, we're politically independent. No central bank is independent. Independent of whom? You know, the theory says independent of politicians. Well, they're not independent of the banks. You see, the banks vet the key decision makers in the Federal Reserve. You don't get appointed to the New York Fed as the director unless the big banks in New York are okay with that, you see. And we still have a problem. We have bankers on the regional boards of the Federal Reserve. You know, the 12 district boards, they make decisions locally, or recommendations for decisions locally to the Fed. And they're still populated by bankers and their corporate lawyer directors, you see. Now, look, the central bank's number one objective and the reason why the Fed was created in 1913 is to bail out the banks. That's it. Right. And in the early history, it was all bankers that ran the Fed at all levels, you see. And only after the Fed screwed up and made the Great Depression of the 30s worse, that FDR put the Fed in the corner and said, now look, you know, monetary policy is going to be run by my Treasury Department. You guys are too biased. Go sit in the corner. And it wasn't until the 1950s that the Fed came out of the doghouse and started playing a role again. All right, so Federal Reserve, you know, there is a political problem there. You know, it's there to bail out the banks. First, private banks, as they periodically get in trouble, and they always do, it's there for that purpose. And secondarily, to try to manage the money supply, but which it can't do in a global economy now, you know. Manage the money supply with short-term rates? No, never could with long-term rates. But yet they're saying they're going to manipulate long-term rates in Japan, and that's the next thing coming here, too. Excuse. See, all this is excuses. All these targets and all these tools are just cover, and they're excuses for the real thing that keeps going on below the scenes, and that is pump the money into the banks and financial institutions and financial investors. That's what it's all about. You know, keep them stabilized. Keep their profits and income growing. It's, you know, it's a fiction that it's really about stimulating on the economy, reducing unemployment, and so forth. It's a fiction. Not true anymore. Okay. As Janet said, the global and U.S. economy have changed a lot, right? Monetary policy lags still exist, right? The structure of inflation has changed, right? Prices are less responsive to changes in the real economy and unemployment rate. You know, well, it's globalized, right? Capitalism is global, and you can't look at it just in one sector anymore. It's one animal, right? Right. And that's the problem, you know. In the post analysis of the Yellen press conference, you know, they brought on Bill Gross and some of the big investors, you know, and they're all confused as to what the Fed is doing, right? This is crazy, they're saying, right? Okay. Well, we're going to follow this closely. You know, watch for the ECB in the next move. Watch for the election. And we'll follow the global economy and central banks in future weeks as well. This is Alternative Visions.